Okay. So what we're saying is that, and here again is the difference between an anecdotal kind of statement about happiness and a logical one. The only evidence King Solomon is going to accept, if we were there in his presence and giving him the argument, the only argument he's going to accept is not your statement that I had a great time, which is basically as far as that is really, I would say, that the philosophy of the masses could probably be summed up in that one sentence. I had a great time. That's it. That's life. If you had a great time, it's like, what do you mean you had a great time? Oh, well, then it already becomes problematic. How do you translate that into logical terms? But what we're showing is that the translation of that into logical terms is that a part of me was enjoying itself. That is not what King Solomon is saying. He's saying if you look at it logically, you see it was only a part of you, and another part was either defunct, put out of commission, or it was suffering. So this is not a happy experience. You cannot call this happiness. So there is a difference between conclusions that we draw when we analyze something with our mind. Analyzing your mind, you'll see this man was not happy. Yet the person experientially will think he is happy because he's making a mistake. He had an enjoyable experience and he's looking for happiness. He says, this is happiness, you see. So the mistake is, I often say the reason why people can't find happiness, the main reason is because they think they know what it is and they're making a mistake. They think it is those moments when they're in elation. But when they're in elation, if they looked at it logically, they would see it's only a part of them that really is in elation. Another part is bombed out, or else it ceases to function. The person doesn't want to think about it. That's what he mentions, by the way, where he says, I think most people don't understand this, but he says that there's a time for everything, a time for sowing, a time for reaping, a time for happiness, a time for sadness. What is he getting at over there? Everybody likes to quote that part. You don't really understand what he's getting at. They think that he's saying something which is good. Actually, it's not. Actually, it's a part of his whole question on life. In other words, what he's saying is that most people's lives are really grounded in the temporal. Like, it's not a logical kind of thing. Like when a person's happy, he doesn't want to think about the sad part. So he just wipes that out of his mind. Now, according to King Solomon, once you do something like that, you can't truly be happy because what you're doing is, in other words, that's the life of the person that's not on the even keel. In other words, the person that is just gripped in the moment. Now it's time to be happy, now it's time to be sad. But when the person is happy, if you think to himself, well, just a moment, how long is this happiness going to last? I have other problems and this and that. Then he's going to get very sad. So the only way he can be happy is by denying a certain aspect of reality, which his mind tells him is so. Now the moment you do that, the moment you deny a part of reality, your mind tells you it's so, you're stopping a part of yourself from working. Now that's conflict. Conflict cannot be happiness. So what King Solomon shows is that his demands for life that's a worthwhile life has to be where the whole person, his mind is happy too. That, he says, we can't find. He says that we think we find. Let's give you an example. I think it was last week, we had what I would call an ecclesiastical event, okay? You'll understand what I mean by when I tell you what it is. There was a young, I'm sure you've all seen on the news, this skating couple from Russia, and the young man was a world famous. He won awards many, many times over, and they were the most famous skating couple in the world. And people if you listen carefully to the people that were commenting on the situation, saying, well, this was like a fairy tale existence they had. You know, I mean, I had a chuckle when I heard that because it may look like fairy tale to you, but meantime, the man's back was in terrible shape, and the amount of work and effort that went into it, and his physical health was really impaired mechanically. Due to those, different types of things that are unnatural for the human body to do, which he was expert at doing. But of course, everybody looks for them. It's fairy tale when they just see them on the ice, but they don't really see what goes into doing into a life like that is a very, very difficult, painful kind of existence. But most people, as I say, very superficial, and they just see, oh, they have a fairy tale existence. But aside from that, suddenly he just died. He just died suddenly, and everybody was struck. How is this possible? This me, I mean, after all, you know, today is the aerobic. You see, people are always looking for something that's going to be their salvation. Today it's the aerobic salvation. In other words, if you're aerobically fit, then you're healthy, you're going to live forever, and there's no problems. And you see a person 28 years old, you're not going to be more aerobically fit than he was. I mean, these people are exercising 8, 10 hours a day, and even more sometimes. So suddenly he was snatched away in the prime of his life, in the midst of all his success. That's exactly what Ecclesiastes says in 9:12. Ecclesiastes 9:12. He says, does not know his time, like fish that are caught in a bad trap, or like birds that are caught in a snare. He says, just like them people are. People are to be compared to them, he says, when a bad time occurs, and it falls upon them suddenly. And as Rabbi Soloveitchik one time said, the main word in that verse is the last word, suddenly. That was exactly to this skater. In the midst of the prime of his success, and suddenly he is gone, snatched away. Now, how do people handle something like that? This is what King Solomon is saying. How do you handle that? Now, most people say, well, it's not going to happen to me. Maybe for a moment they're shaking. They'll say, oh, that can happen to anybody. But after a while, they say, well, I eat properly, and I exercise, and I do this, and I do that, and my heart is okay, and I don't have a congenital heart defect, and this and that. It's not going to happen to me, you see. Of course, we know when we think about it that that's ridiculous, because you really cannot know what's going to happen. You can, even if you would be able to know physically what's going on inside yourself, which itself is impossible, at least at this point in our knowledge. But even if you could know that, you could still get killed by an accident, a car accident, or any other kind of untoward event that can come along and take a person's life. But people protect themselves against these thoughts with the idea that somehow or other, people do not say, well, that's rare. That's not enough, because rare is still scary. Maybe you're the rare one. You know, it's like somebody said, when it's the 3% of the statistics is always very important to the 3% of the people. If you're in that 3%, that's 100% bad. So most people would not be satisfied with that. They have to build a wall around that kind of reality and somehow or other say it's not going to happen to me. Now, here again is where King Solomon would say, but by doing that, you see what you're doing? That means that there's a part of your mind that's giving you information and you're constantly blocking that information off. That means that you are in conflict. Now, in conflict, you can't be in happiness. Happiness must be some situation where you're not in conflict. So that's why King Solomon mentions this fact. He says, but that a person can get snatched away in the prime of his career, just when all the person is looking forward to, or they're in the midst of their greatest fantasy, and boom, it's gone. How could a person even enjoy success when they know that tomorrow I may be gone? If a person wouldn't block that thought out, the person would never experience any kind of happiness. So there King Solomon, with that one statement, shows how, from another aspect, human life, it's impossible for a person to be happy unless he blocks out a part of his mind. Blocks out a part of his mind, he's in conflict. In conflict, he can't be happy. So the argument that King Solomon presents is simply logic. From a logical standpoint, is undeniable. And that's really, that's basically his approach throughout the text. That's the underlying thesis of his entire presentation. But as I said, he goes through every lifestyle and shows each lifestyle where its vulnerability is. That's really the genius of Solomon's presentation, his philosophical presentation in Ecclesiastes. Let me stop here for a moment now, and you know that David had a question.
Okay. All right. Here's the thing I would ask. What would be your way of bringing, say, the masses of people to that level of understanding that they have to understand themselves? Let me give an example. See, most people are concerned with making a living, supply, and I'm not talking about just getting rich. I'm just talking about the basic essentials of food, shelter, clothing, whether it's getting the kids through school and keeping healthy. How do you get them involved in this world of ideas that you're talking about there?
Mm-hmm. Okay. that's kind of a catch-22. Because in order to get them involved, it's got to be some kind of a grassroots interest, okay? But I think that most people do have that interest. Actually, I'm very optimistic. I think that most people do have an interest. No, I'll tell you why, for a simple reason. Of course, most people, even though they may not think they're unhappy, they experience unhappiness, which was what King Solomon is showing. That you may not think you're unhappy because you don't want to think that way. It's a terrible thing. You want to say, hey, I'm a happy guy, I got everything I want. But you are experiencing unhappiness. I remember recently a person who retired, and what happened was they were in business. They were thrown out of business due to competition from abroad. But fortunately, they had a lot of real estate, and they just cashed in the real estate. And this fellow told me, he says, Rabbi, I worked like a donkey for 28 years. And he's in his 50s now, and he was in his father's business. It was a successful business. The business closed down. He cashed in on the real estate. And I said, what are you doing now? Now I'm retired. He's a young fellow, and he's relatively young in his 50s. And I said, well, are you happy now? He says, if I'm not happy, he says, who will be happy? I have my health. I have money. I have a family. I have everything anybody wants. But after speaking to him for a while, he told me that the main thing, he said, for me is to get through the day. He says, because I have nothing to do. So what this fellow does is he walks on the boardwalk for 3 hours every day, a total of 11 miles, and he starts at about 12, around 3, and he says he has to go out to eat breakfast, which he only eats a muffin and coffee because he wants to stay healthy and continue to enjoy this wonderful life he has. So he says, but he has to eat out because he says otherwise he'd have no motivation to get out of bed and go do something because he has nothing to do, basically. So he makes these artificial, he made for himself, actually, an artificial kind of need so that he can have a motivation to get out of bed through his walking. And then he comes home and tries to kill more time. Says, I watch this show. I kill more time this way, Rabbi. I kill that. By the time I turn around, it's dinner time already. Now, after it became quite clear to me that for this man, he doesn't think he's unhappy, but every moment of his day is really a struggle. He has nothing to live for, and he's just trying to live for life itself, which is the most absurd kind of thing that a person can do. On the contrary, every moment he's just waiting to kill time. It's such a sad thing to hear when a person says, I want to kill time. That means that they're just trying to get through life. They might as well be dead now. So there's no purpose in their existence. But, of course, they don't think that way. If you ask them, well, of course I'm happy. Because a person does not want to admit that they are unhappy because it's too tragic and they wouldn't be able to face the consequences. So most people just deny it. But most people, as I said, do experience, I mean, all people, not most, all people, experience unhappiness, and that is the one thing that you have to work with. If you want a person, because of, that's why I think people turn towards religion, or they turn towards whatever panacea the current fad is trying to, why do you always have these fads? I mean, actually, you know, the exercise fad, if you look back in history, you see 100 years ago, they had the same exact thing, where the exercise people were walking hundreds of miles, all kinds of crazy things, and they were convinced that exercise is the panacea. But then these things pass by, because then you see this one exercised and he died, and this one, you know, these things don't work. And then the cycle, you know, it's a cycle, basically. It may not be exactly identical, but it's like one of King Solomon's cycles, you know, and what happens is, you know, you always forget what happened 100 years ago, and they go through the same kind of trying to panacea for life. But the one thing that we have in our favor, that man has in his favor, and that is, that's the good thing is that he, you know, it's my thing. The rabbis say on the verse that where it says God's all good, so there's a rabbinical, there's a midrash on that that says, what does it mean all is good? It means death. The day of death is good. So, of course, what does it mean the day of death is good? Everybody looks at that as bad. But the truth of the matter is, what the rabbis are saying is that death is a good thing because everybody knows they're going to die, and that sort of puts a damper on the whole fantasy and illusion of great success. And that's what King Solomon really says in Ecclesiastes, that that death itself is something which cannot be spoken away, you cannot overcome it, and if you really thought about it, you'd have very little motivation to live, but you block it out. Again, you get yourself in a conflict, and you think that you're happy when you're really in conflict. So the one thing we have for us is the fact that you do have death, and that you do have the fact that life itself cannot really be satisfying. Because people are unhappy, that can always be used to get people's interest and to show them that health can only be a means. But what are you healthy for? You can't say, well, I'm going to just sit back today and enjoy my health. I'm enjoying my health for the next 2 years. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Health is a means. There has got to be something in life more than health. And the things that the mistake they make is the Rambam, Maimonides has summarized it very easily. He says the mistake of people can be summarized in the following manner. He says people are taking accidents and they're making them into essences. Now, what he means is like this. An essence means a purpose, an objective. The mistake that people make in life is they take the means and they want to make it into the end goal. Money is a means. Money is not an end goal. But what do people do? They make it into an end goal. That's it. I'll become wealthy. And what happens when they become wealthy? Then they are faced with the emptiness and the realization that you just can't have satisfaction from money. As I think sometimes he said, the only who's saying it in a serious way, comedians have a certain insight also, because that's why they're so funny, because they do have certain insight. He says the only thing that money can give you is that you don't have to worry about money. It can't really give you anything else. So actually, I always say that with money, you could either do one of three things. Either you could show off. That would be number one priority for most people on the list. Number two would be buy things that you don't really need. And number three is just be satisfied with the fact that you don't have any money problem, which is correct. But people take things that are only means, and they try to make them into an end goal, into an essence. It's an accident. An accident in philosophy means something which is non-essential. So they're taking accidents, as Maimonides says, and they're mistaking them for essences. So that is done. Oh, health is a means. You can't say health is only a means for life. Health can't be a goal, but people try to make that into a goal. The reason is because they have no real goals. Since they have no real goals and they don't want to admit they have no real goals, what they do is they have to feel they have something. They take any insight that's good and they place it up there as a goal. Okay, so this is really the mistaken philosophy of the everyday man, the common man. A family is, if you take a look at it, I would say that's another one of the illusions of the modern day ecclesiastical illusion, is the family. The main thing is family. Now, the truth of the matter is, a good family is a wonderful thing, but that you can't live for a family. A family is a nice thing to have, wonderful thing to have. That's not the essence of man's existence, and that's why it just simply doesn't work. That's why you see again and again it does not work. They have a good family, but then suddenly the husband gets a roving eye, there's a rebellion, the child rebels against the parent, and they have all the fantasy of the kind of family that the father wants is not what the son wants, the wife has a different kind of idea, and the strife and the struggle, and finally they say, well, we're working through our problems, we're working through. The point is, the whole thing is a mistake, because what they're trying to do is take something which God gave to man as a means. A family is a means. They have a good family, then it's a wonderful thing. Like the rabbis say, there are things that they call them that relax a person's mind. If a person has a good family, if a person has is financially well off. These are things that give you a certain sense of relaxation, but it's only a means. If you try to make it into an end, it's going to fail. It has to fail, first of all, because you're demanding too much from that thing, and that thing can't give you that much. It's like if a person wants to take a ride in a car, and he wants it to be a plane, but it's not a plane. You're going to be unhappy. And the same thing is true with romantic love. Romantic love is a wonderful thing, but it's only a means. That's not the purpose of a person's life. Person's life is not person's need to have his essence is to be in love. Love is a nice thing; it has its place, but it's also a means. It's a part of the relationship between man and woman, which really is supposed to be an intellectual experience, where man has a certain kind of way of thinking about reality, and woman has a different kind of way of thinking about reality, and both components together comprise one entity of man. That is where you have a satisfying situation for man, but not the romantic itself. The romantic is only a platform. It's only a means. So yes, these are showing. But the way that we could reach people is through the fact that people know that they are unhappy. they experience it. They may not really experience it. That's why if you open up that, you have a little bit of an opening there. If you could just broaden that, that's the area that you could really expand upon and produce a person that's who evokes interest into understanding life. That's what basically Torah is the understanding of life and the proper and the correct lifestyle. And we have these fantastic guidelines that were given to us by God. And once you understand them and you see them, you realize that how fortunate you are if you do have them. But people are looking for it. There's no question about it. Because they're unhappy. Because they know that they have to face death. Because they know all the things that Ecclesiastes talks about. Ecclesiastes is the most fantastic philosophical work because, as I said before, what it does is it's a combination. This is where the Torah is unique. It's a combination of psychology and philosophy. According to Torah, philosophy and psychology cannot be separated. They are not two sciences like they say they are in the university. That's a big mistake. Universities are wrong. They're one science. You can't have one without the other. So this combination is what King Solomon, is the way King Solomon sets it up. Now, does that have a question?
Well.
Listen, if I'm going too long, you can interrupt me.
Well, see, the point that I would make in this whole overall picture is that, see, I would take, for example, the guy that you talk about that walks the boardwalk.
Okay.
That if he had proper motivation,
yes,
that at this time in his life, he could spend his time to learning and sharing what he's learned. But obviously he is not motivated. He doesn't have the proper motivation.
Well, let me explain that. I'll explain that with a verse from Ecclesiastes again.
Okay.
It's easy. I mean, when you really study it, restudy it, and restudy it again. You know, the Talmud says that there's no comparison between a person that studies something 100 times and 101 times. And what they mean to say is that you would think that the difference between 100 and 101 is very slight, but it's not. Because in learning, the more you study, the more you see, the more you see. And I've gone over Ecclesiastes, I don't know how many times, but every time I go over it, I always see new ideas. At any rate, the quote from Ecclesiastes says in the beginning, he says, there are mistakes that you cannot correct, okay? That's another illusion that he's referring to, that people always say, well, it's never too late. You know, now that is a very, see, in our society, people always like to say things that are in line with fantasy, like, there's nothing you can't do. I mean, there's nothing you can't do. It's ridiculous. Reality shows you there's plenty you can't do, and it's not a good thing for a person to think there's nothing you can't do, because then he's going to try to do stupid things that don't make any sense, and he's going to go above one, and he's going to fail. But, of course, then they tell him, now you're down in the dumps, and soon things will be great. So the one false philosophy is built on another false philosophy. But this idea that it's never too late is wrong, and that's what King Solomon is saying. He says there are mistakes that you cannot correct. There are mistakes that you can correct, but there are mistakes you cannot correct. And one of the mistakes that you cannot correct is how you spent your youth, okay? That is a difficult one to correct, okay, if not impossible. That's why he states, King Solomon states in the end of Ecclesiastes, he says, regard in your youth, he says. Why? Because if you study Torah in your youth, if you remember God and you search for God in your youth, which means studying the whole approach of Torah, and you live the philosophy of Torah, then you will have it in your old age. But if you miss that period of life of your youth, it is almost impossible. It's not impossible in the situation. It's actually impossible to correct that. Now, this individual, I had that possibility, but the point is, his mind hadn't been used. He's in his mid-50s. He never used his mind. To start at that age, to use your mind in a way in which it's going to be really really enjoyable, satisfying, is many times impossible. I won't say all the time, but I would say many times it's actually impossible. And I mean, I do see people.
All right, let me see. What I'm saying is that in the pursuit of living, that you have to establish those basic necessities. And I think if you can instill the ideas of learning and the importance of learning, that when a person gets older, the case of this individual, or in the case when your children are out of the house and through college or whatever, then a person, if he has that desire, if it's been embedded from his youth up, remembering the Creator in the day of your youth, that when he gets older, that then he should really get on a fast track.
Yes.
Okay. That's what the point that I'm making.
Well, that's a very good point, and I would say even if a person had used their mind when they were younger, they didn't. You see, there are parts of life. It's true. I mean, the later part of life can really be the most enjoyable, the greatest part of life. That which people are afraid of, old age. Everybody's afraid of old age. The reason why they're afraid of old age is because they're basically hedonists, and their enjoyments are all physical. And when they get older, those things are definitely gone, like King Solomon describes it in the last chapter, about how each part of the person starts to deteriorate. And he gives the example of like a city, but he means that example, that's a mushel, that's a parable, which really means the human body. And the rabbis explain each part of the body, very interesting, how the deteriorates. And he shows that if a person did not engage in thought and in ideas in their youth, then they just face what most people do face in this country, a process of deterioration. Then they start getting into ways to try to avoid it through facelifts and all these operations and just trying to get out of it. But the truth of the matter is it's a futile effort, and the end is their life becomes a worthless existence. Whereas according to Torah, the highest praise that the Torah has for an individual is the word zaken, which means... Literally, it means old, but the rabbi means wise. It means the elders, means the wise people. We can call a person a zaken if he's 18 years old, if he has knowledge. So if a person's life is geared towards knowledge, and that's what Ecclesiastes says in the end, actually. He almost says it outright, that if a person remembers God in his youth, and he will not face those days and will hope to live. And that's exactly what he says. He says, remember God in your early youth so that you won't reach those days which your existence becomes worthless. And that's absolutely correct. That's one of his concepts. But you must. I'm not saying that a person. This doesn't mean when he says remember God. By the way, it does not mean what most people call the religious lifestyle. Most of the religious lifestyle is usually idolatrous. But what he means is that a person should live in line with a life of Torah.
You got a minute, Rabbi.
Okay. Which means a life of wisdom and knowledge. Now, a person, even if a person did not know what that lifestyle was, but if their mind was active and they used their mind, they used their intelligence, and then when they reach old age, they could redirect it towards Torah. But if a person never really used their mind, well, as I said, many times impossible to correct that, and unfortunately, as King Solomon says, there are mistakes that one cannot correct, and it is sometimes too late. Okay, on that note, we'll end.